Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Unless you've been living under a rock, you will understand that the whole concept of, and this is part of Who Am I, about gender has really captured the public's attention. Gender dysphoria, issues of transgender, and that's what we're going to try to pick out today. I want to ask you a question. Can you think of any attribute that characterizes all members of one gender and only those members of one gender? I've got a standing bet and I've never paid out, yeah? Can you think of anything that all males have or can do and only males have or can do? Can you think of anything that all females have or can do and only females have or can do? Anyone? Mag? Okay. I may actually have to pay out. Okay. Damn it. Don't tell. Breastfeeding? No, I know lots of females who can't breastfeed. Yeah. First of all, I want to tell you what I'm not going to talk about, though it's a really important topic, and that's the whole issue of intersex. Okay, so we're going to have to go through a lot of definitions today. Sex is in relation to anatomy, yeah? Your physical attributes, yeah? And there are many people, and that's the official definition. You may think of other definitions of sex, but that's the definition I'm using, yeah? Okay? And there are many people whose physical attributes encompass both male and female genitalia or reproductive system. Okay, that those are people who have intersex, who are intersex, yeah? We're not talking about intersex today, though that's an important topic. What I'm going to talk today is a whole concept of gender identity, gender diversity, and issues of being transgender. And we're going to have to understand those definitions so that we understand the issues, so that you know what to do about it when you may see a patient who complains or is distressed about their gender. So I'm going to use myself as an example in terms of my gender identity. Gender identity is the subjective sense of whether you identify as being male or female. It's subjective. We'll talk about it later. It probably has developed by the age of 4 or 5. And it's really difficult to articulate. Why do you identify as a female? Why do you identify as a male? I mean, I'm a child psychiatrist. Yeah, I kind of work in this area. But if you ask me about that, I'd actually really find it hard to put it into words. I just know I'm a male. The thought about me identifying as a female just doesn't make any sense. I'm a male. That's just my identity. Now, if I find it difficult to put it into words, just imagine what it's like for a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old person who's struggling with their identity anyway, in a broader term. Gender expression or gender orientation is how I demonstrate that to you. So it's the objective sense of my subjective identity. Do you get it? Now, you can see I identify as a cisgendered, heterosexual, Anglo-Australian male, yeah? 10 or 15 years ago, I would have just said I'm a bloke. But this is what I have to say these days, yeah? Okay? Now, we're going to unpick all that, okay? In other words, my gender identity, male, is the same as my gender orientation, yeah? I identify as a heterosexual male. We're not talking about sexuality today, we're talking about gender, and that's really important. Sexuality, who I'm physically attracted to, is very different to my gender, who I identify as. Make sense? And also, I'm Anglo-Australian. And there are significant issues, and there'll be a slide soon about this, about the fact that different people in different cultures have a different way of identifying, but within that culture, it's understood that they're either male or female, or they identify as male and female. But it's not just in the clothes I'm wearing. It's in 101 little things that we do every day, for me, as an Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Australian male, that you see that I'm identifying as male. Now, I can see right now, I can look at in the audience, and I can see something that in Anglo-Australian society, we do a lot, females do, and that's cross their legs, yeah? Males, we don't tend to cross our legs like that. We kind of sit like this or kind of like that. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Some of you, and you know what? That's okay. That's okay. Okay. So there's 101 little things that we do every day in our society to demonstrate what your gender orientation and therefore what your gender identity is. Provided my gender identity is the same as my gender orientation, all is well in the world. But if my gender identity is incongruent or differs from my gender orientation, that's where conflict can occur. And I see many young people who are gender questioning, they're uncertain, yeah? Who are gender variant, gender diverse. So let's just unpick that. There are many young people who like to do things that are stereotypically associated with the other gender, but still see themselves as their birth gender. And in fact, it's very common for females, okay, in our society. We even have a term. I don't particularly like the term, but we use the term tomboy. Yeah? So as a female, you can wear boys' clothes, you can, and I'm, forgive me, I'm going to be stereotypical, you know, you can rough it up with the boys, you can go and play rugby. You know, you can play in the mud, rough and tumble. No one thinks different. You're just a tomboy, yeah? If you're a boy and you put on a pink tutu, you're off to see Dr. Steve, yeah? So in other words, what girls can do within our society is much broader than what boys can do. But even in that, the girls, if you ask them, they say, yeah, I just like to do that stuff. In fact, I've got a very brave little boy who says to me, Dr. Steve, why can't I wear girls' clothes? A good question. He likes nothing more than when he gets home from school to put on a little bit of bling when he can get away with it, wear some high heel shoes and toddle around with a dress. But he still identifies as a boy. He just says, I just like to do this, Dr. Steve. There are other boys and girls that I see that say they wish they were of another gender. Kind of like they also might wish that they were captain of the footy team or the netball team or that they got straight A's or they, you know, they could go skiing every year or something. And they understand that what they wish is not what they get. Yeah? But there are other young people that I see who have this tremendous sense of dysphoria. And the dysphoria is a sense of despair, sadness, because their gender identity doesn't conform with their gender orientation. And the best way I can get you to understand that is of those of you who have an opposite gendered partner, what would it be like to wear their clothes and do everything that your partner would do for the next month? So I'm married, my wife is Lisa. The thought of me wearing Lisa's dresses and putting on Lisa's bling and going to the girls' toilet, the female toilet, just makes me feel really uncomfortable. I couldn't do it. That's what gender dysphoria is. Now, of course, we also have to understand that many, many cultures around the world see that there's a third gender. It's very common with our Aboriginal people here in Australia. It's very common in the South Pacific, Southeast Asia, in India, First Nations people in North America, right across the world, it's very common and understood that there is this concept of the third sex, the third gender. It's called many, many different things. So there are sociological and cultural norms around this. But we tend to really struggle with this, or have struggled with this in the West. The other issue with gender identity is, as I've said, gender identity is really established for 99% of the population by about the age of 4 or 5. A guy called Kohlberg, way back in 1966, developed a theory about how children develop gender identity, which has held up very well. By the age of 4 or 5, little boys and girls know very well that they're a little boy and a little girl, and they know very well that they will not change. In fact, we're probably most gender stereotyped by about the age of 7 to 10. And to those of you who have children have all seen this. If you've got kids in prep, 4 or 5 years of age, they tend to play with each other, little preppies. They play, they even have, I know in Queensland, where I'm from, most schools, the preps go to their own gender-neutral toilet. Yeah? By the age of 6 or 7, you've seen this, the boys and girls, they pull apart. I don't want to play with her, I'll get girl's germs. Yeah? You've all seen that. So the boys and girls, they pull apart. They know very well they're a boy or a girl, and they're not going to change. So boys and girls get very stereotyped very quickly. Is that sociologically driven or biologically driven? We'll get to that in a minute. Sexual identity, sexual orientation, really doesn't start until puberty. So they're very, very different. Yeah? Why does gender diversity occur? The answer is, we don't really know. There's good studies to demonstrate that probably gender dysphoria itself is genetically driven. There's a genetic load, probably about 70%. We know that male fetuses in the uterus are subjected to an androgen surge at around weeks 8 or 9. That may have something to do with it. We do know that it is not primarily socially or psychologically driven. And this is so important because there's lots of myths out there. Okay? Just taking your little girl to the rugby isn't going to make her a boy. Yeah? And just playing with your boy who likes dolls isn't going to make him a girl. And that's really important because parents come to me and ask me about that. And I go, play with them. You're not going to change their gender, but you will be a better father or a better mother. Play with them. Do what they want to do. Get down. If the boy wants to play dolls with him. And there are so many other myths out there. I had a woman break down in tears when I told her that the fact that she drank coffee in pregnancy hasn't made her child transgender. There are so many different myths. It's concerning. So there's no evidence that gender is primarily sociologically or psychologically driven. I don't have enough time to talk that through further. I've got a whole lecture on that. But there is no evidence. It's probably primarily genetically driven with possibly some changes in utero, which then have a wraparound psychological or social drivers, which enforce the internal sense. What is the prevalence of gender diversity in the Australian population? Well, in fact, it's really, really common. Parents report that about 4% of boys and 8% of girls have interests that are stereotypical of the other gender. Parents also report that about 1% of boys and 2.5% of girls wish that they were the opposite gender. And this study is recently taken from a 2014 survey in New Zealand for older adolescents and young people, for youth, who identified, and there are some issues with this study, but about 1% of young people or youth identified as transgender and 2.5% were unsure. In other words, it is really quite common. Therefore, you will see these people. Can we predict? Can we predict those children who may be gender diverse, gender variant? Can we predict if they're going to develop into adolescence and identify as being transgender? The answer is it's really, really difficult. There are some clues. Children who present really early with significant symptoms of dysphoria probably are less likely to desist. In other words, will continue to to be gender dysphoric than other children, but we don't know. In fact, the evidence is almost up to 90% of gender diverse children will, once they hit adolescence, which is kind of like the deal breaker when they hit puberty, will actually continue to identify as their birth gender. So what we don't want to do is be encouraging all these children, yeah, to socially transition, but there are a number of children that probably would benefit from socially transitioning, and that's where we need to focus. And that's why we're developing gender clinics across Australia, because whether you like it or not, this is a phenomena that's here. And whether you like it or not, young people experiment. In the Jurassic period, when I was a teenager, if you were really out there, you might get a piercing and dress as a goth, yeah? Now, piercings can be taken out and wardrobes can change. But these days, the young people I see tell me it's increasingly common for boys or men, or males, I should say, to ask their female friends to go to the GP and to get some estrogen and just check it out. And we'll just take some estrogen for a while just to see what it's like. And if you're girls, there's an increasing trend to have what they call tea parties, testosterone parties, where they'll order testosterone online from China or some other overseas country, and they'll give each other injections of testosterone. That's the reality of what we're dealing with. So what we really do need is gender clinics where gender-confused, gender-questioning, gender-diverse young people can come so that they can work through the issues, and that if the decision is made to transition them for the minority, that it's done in a thoughtful way with experts who know what they're dealing with, rather than a tea party. The other issue that I'm very interested in is the levels of mental health problems that these young people have. This is from a 2017 study of almost 1,000 young people and their parents across Australia. 1 in 2 young people who are transgender or gender diverse have attempted suicide. 4 out of 5 trans people have reported self-harm. 90% of transgendered young people would screen positive for a mental illness. 80% of transgendered young people report being discriminated with in the workplace, at school, at TAFE, at university. Almost 70% report that they have no supports at home. And I have seen the most horrendous thing. I've seen transgendered young people come in who have bound their breasts with duct tape in an attempt to hide their breasts. And as the duct tape came off comes the skin. I've seen transgendered young people who the thought of using a pad, much less a tampon, is so abhorrent to them that they wear pull-up nappies that leak and smell. They can't go to school or to university for 1 week out of every 4. I've seen transgendered young people that, once again, the thought of touching, let alone cleaning their genitals, is so abhorrent that their hygiene is poor. I've seen fungal disease. I've seen the most horrendous things. And yet when you sit down with them and you listen to them and you allow them to express their grief and you treat them with respect, non-judgmentally, many, not all, because it's tough being transgendered, but many, but not all, their mental health issues decrease. Yeah? And I've seen young people who, when you sit down and you speak with them, that their questioning then decreases too. And that they are able to make appropriate choices with the most appropriate support. So, what can we do? First of all, we need to be aware of the risk that these young people manage every day. The risks of transphobia, the risks of being ostracized, the risks of mental health issues, the need to be heard. And what we can do is offer a safe, supportive place that you can listen non-judgmentally, you know what supports are available, and you can treat them like they deserve to be treated, which is individuals who are struggling just like we all are. Thanks very much.
Thank you for a brilliant distillation of what's a very, very complex and urgent problem. And I like how, once again, the theme of listening with intent and respect comes up. Certainly not the first time this conference. So we'll go over to Mary. And have we got any questions?
Yeah, we have. We have. Stephen, lots of people are tweeting your pearls of wisdom. And I think there are lots of parents who can't wait to play Barbie dolls with their boys, so that's good. Emily Pascoe has asked a question. What's the best way to ask about gender identity when you suspect dysphoria, but the young person isn't talking about it? So, for example, an 11-year-old with anxiety who hates anything to do with puberty.
Okay, so that's very important. The first thing is to make sure that you ask permission and you talk with them by themselves. And then I think that you just basically, in very simple language, distill down what you've learnt today, what gender identity is and what sexuality is. Because a lot of young people, particularly entering puberty, get the two mixed up, yeah? And there may be other reasons why that young person might be anxious about puberty too. So don't think that all things are gender, yeah? There may be other things going on. But I think being open and honest and transparent is the way to go.
I've got another question from Cassie. Do you know if there's an increased rate of gender dysphoria in autism? And if so, do you have an opinion about a possible link?
Yeah, look, there is. There's no question that children on the autistic spectrum disorder have higher rates of gender dysphoria or gender diversity. There's studies in Toronto and from Amsterdam that demonstrate that. Now, we're not sure why. There's some early genetic studies that show that there may actually be a genetic overlap, yeah? So there's a gender, so there's a genetic loading. And also, the question is, and this is actually an area of interest of mine, it may well be that because children who are on the spectrum have fixed areas of interest and focus, that for a period of time it might be around their gender, yeah? And I don't want to push things out too much, but there's also something that I call the Peter Pan syndrome, which, and I've seen this, is particularly children who are on the spectrum, when they hit puberty, they become very distressed at the pubertal changes. But it's not that they want to be the opposite gender, they just want to be the pre-pubertal person of that gender, of their birth gender. And I've been caught out at least on 3 occasions. Okay? So those just are some thoughts there about ASD.
Can I have one more? You
may.
Thank you. Laura Stevens asks, if I identify a family in my clinic with a gender identity concern, where or how do I find a good team to refer them to?
Well, if you're in Queensland, you can refer them to the Lady Salento Children's Hospital Gender Clinic and Statewide Service. In Melbourne, there's an excellent clinic at the Royal Children's Hospital. Also in WA. If you're in New South Wales, you're in a little bit of trouble. And in South Australia, I'm not sure. In Tasmania, the Royal Children's Hospital, I believe, visits the state to offer some support.
Right. Well, please put your hands together and thank Stephen for a wonderful talk. Thank you.